reading from the Art of Chanting, third chapter of the Nama Parad, and occasionally we're reading entries from Shiva Maharaj's very excellent book describing bhakti, Shuddha Bhakti Chintamani. So he has a whole chapter in his book, Removing Unwanted Habits. So I thought before we dive into the other offenses and how to rectify them, that we would just read some entries from his book, because he gives some ideas for removing offenses himself. The holy name, being non-different from the Lord, is independent. No one can force the Lord to give his grace. But a sincere devotee can please the holy name and invoke his mercy. So, and then he explains, because as I've heard, the definition of aparad means dissatisfaction, displeasure, to go against the pleasure. This is apa, against, and rad means pleasure. So aparad means that which dissatisfies the holy name or doesn't give the holy name pleasure. So therefore, if someone's not pleased with us, they won't be very kind to us. It's practical. If someone is pleased with us or happy with us, then they'll be generally kind to us. So the holy name is Krishna. Krishna is the Supreme Person. He's God. The holy name is also the Supreme Person. And the holy name is also God. There's no difference. Vinatvam namanamano. So he's saying devotees who have displeased the name, how do you displease the name? By committing offenses. They must cease their misbehavior. They must stop their misbehavior. Stop making offenses. And with faith in the Lord's benevolence, which means his kindness, take shelter of devotional service in the company of Vaishnavas. So we don't do anything separate. If we commit some transgressions in bhakti, some fall down, some offenses, some serious misdeed, there's no other remedial measure that we take up. We simply increase our bhakti and improve our improve our association with good quality devotees. Because oftentimes we get into an offensive mentality, or we get into an offensive way of thinking due to bad association with neophyte devotees. We have a new devotee. He thinks he's, and he should think, Srinatha Pisanichana. He's very fallen. He's very low. He's very insignificant. But at the same time, with some devotional discrimination, we have to be able to understand who is good association, who is bad. So the simplest criterion is to mix up with some devotee and listen to what they say. So if they say, this is good, this is bad, this devotee's no good, this devotee's good, then you can say, you can immediately make a file. Well, this person, I'll offer respects to them, and I'll treat them and with all the tolerance of a tree, and all respect, and not expect any respect. In return, amanina, manidena. But certainly, I will not meet them again in the future. I'll be very, very careful about, no matter how close we think they are to us, or how important they are not important at all. They are greatest enemies if they are so-called friends and they're belittling Vaishnavas. Because that's like spreading cancer. It's like having a heavily contagious cold and going up to somebody and say, open your mouth. And sneezing on that person and coughing on that person. Is that a good idea? No. Because they're very contagious, they have some AIDS or whatever, some contagious disease, and they spit on you and sneeze on you. And then you go away, you get contaminated. You get the disease. You can even die. From bad association, you can die, isn't it? You associate with someone who has a venereal disease or syphilis intimately, and you get the disease, and you can die. People die from these AIDS and HPV or whatever it is. I don't know, whatever the things are. So, the same way, our bhakti can die by bad association. I mean, it doesn't die, but it gets severely covered. So, therefore, we should avoid such persons. And with faith in the Lord's kindness, take shelter of bhakti, continue doing devotional service in good association. Improve the association and keep on with the service. Because generally, everyone has a full plate of service. Everyone, either they're grihasthas or not married, and they have plenty of things to do in the context of their family life or temple life or their personal bhajan life. They have books to read, services to do, for Guru and Krishna. So everyone's pretty much engaged, usually after some time in devotion. So then you can't really improve or increase your service, but you can improve your association. Serve, you know, make, if you're making flower, for example, it's a simple example. Let's say you're sitting in a temple, make flower garlands, and the group of ladies you make flower garlands with, they're always nitpicking and finding fault with devotees. Then you take the flowers and you sit a few feet, sit 10 feet away. They say, "Oh, what's with you? You're antisocial?" "No, no, I just want to keep to myself and do my service or whatever." You know, whatever, you try to graciously avoid a conflict without saying, "No, you guys are all my," you know, somehow make it sound like it's your fault that, "Well, I'm not feeling good these days. I want to stay by myself and make garlands." And whatever, you have to use your intelligence. The only remedial measure, the only way we can rectify or remove our offenses is to chant with the Lord's pure devotees. It's very interesting. Shri Brahma was telling me this. The only remedial measure, for this is his chapter, removing unwanted habits. That means anarthas. Naparada is one of the anarthas. The only way to remove it is chant with Lord's pure devotees. So fortunately, the Lord's pure devotees are often chanting. They're engaged in kirtan and in Mayapur, Vrindavan, wherever. And they have classes sometimes and they invite people over and then they have a kirtan. Our Govinda Maharaj or Shivaram Maharaj or Radhana Swami or so many Radha Govinda Maharaj or so many great devotees I'm just saying. And before they have class or pravachan, usually they have some kirtan. Those devotees, their chanting is very pure and very powerful and very beneficial. It's not that everyone's chanting the same. A frog can also chant Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. A frog or a parrot or a minor bird. But there's no backing there. There's sound, but no backing. There's no purity there. So everyone's, "Oh, he's chanting, he led the kirtan, and he led the kirtan, she led the kirtan, everybody led the kirtan." But there's a difference. That's why he's saying. That's called an absolute statement. Absolute means there's no argument. This is it. "Well, isn't there another way? Can we do this?" "No, there's no other way. There's no other way. There is no other way." The only remedial measure is to chat with the Lord's pure devotees. Offenders must accept whatever punishment the holy name deems suitable and patiently wait to be reinstated in the Lord's good graces. It's very interesting. You could think, oh, of course he gives the analogy here, so we don't have to think about it. But this came to my mind already because I read it before. It's like you're working for someone, you're a house servant, and you goof up, you do some kind of funny thing, you steal somebody's jewelry and you sell it, and you can't recover the jewelry or the money, but the master of the house says, "Well, anyway, it's hard to get a good servant. Aside from this theft, you've been pretty good for so many years." So they reinstate you. I mean, they let you keep on serving, but they don't feel very good towards you. "You ripped off my earrings," or whatever. And so they don't give you they give you your basic pay, but no extra favors. They don't let you sit and watch TV with them, and they don't give you extra little, you know, the master doesn't give you extra, what do they call it, tips or perks. That's a term they use. He doesn't give you extra perks by a little extra money on the weekend. Servant goes home for the weekend, and usually the master would say, "Oh, you're going to see your kids and family. Here's another 200 rupees." You know, these kind of acknowledgments out of friendly, loving feeling, as if you're a member of the family. Now the master feels, "Oh, you're a thief. You're a thief. I'm not very happy with you, but I'm not going to fire you." So holy name is a person. He's a master. He's the supreme master, the supreme Lord himself. He's our only master. We don't have any other master. Of course, we have the spiritual master. But the holy name is Krishna. So he's the spiritual master works for the holy name. Who is the boss of the guru? The holy name. Krishna. But generally, most gurus, unless they're very advanced, are not like sitting down every night and talking to Krishna. Isn't it? So, but they are meeting with the holy name. They're meeting regularly with the holy name, morning, noon, and night. And the holy name is their master. What do we call the holy name? Sri Nam Prabhu. It's called Srinam Prabhu. The word Prabhu means what?
Master.
The master. The master means the Lord, the boss. So the Guru is chanting, and you're also chanting. He's meeting with the master. Nam Prabhu, Srinam Prabhu. Sri Nam. Nam is Krishna. Sri is Radharani. Radha Krishna. So he's meeting with Radha and Krishna in the holy name and submitting himself there and giving his accounts and taking strength from them, getting orders from headquarters, taking his orders from the holy name, getting his service record for the day, and as a master or gives the required servant. So this is the point. So the holy name, he's not happy. So it's a very nice sentence. He says that when the holy name thinks that you're suitable, and he's given whatever punishment the holy name deems suitable, he'll punish us, then he'll patiently wait. The holy name will wait to reinstate you in the Lord's good graces. You're serving, but you know yourself, you've lost the loving feeling. You've lost the sweet internal joy that you were feeling before when you were serving Nam Prabhu. Or some kind of joy, some kind of peace, some kind of happiness. Every single devotee who's been initiated has experienced that. And then they say, something's missing in my japa. What's missing? Nam Prabhu is not happy. That's the conclusion we can make. So he's waiting, it's a wait and see policy. He's waiting to see, will you rectify your attitude? Will you improve your mood and your behavior? And will you surrender and let go? You've accumulated some dirt behind your ears. Will you clean the back of your ears? So now he gives the analogy which makes us understand this principle a little more clearly. Devotees are like servants. It's a very beautiful analogy. This book is really quite a good contribution. Devotees are like servants of a wealthy king. When a king's servants offend him, the king may... I basically told him. The king may neglect them for some time in order to reform them. This is the king's mercy. So the king here is the holy name, the Prabhu. The neglected servants then fall into poverty with all its distresses, while suffering the lots of paupers, errant servants, which means wayward or misbehaving servants, recall their happy past as the king's wards, means his intimate servants. And finally, in a mood of humility, again they surrender to their master. The servants come and say, really, I'm really truly feeling you've withdrawn your graces from me. You've withdrawn your mercy from me. And I'm here serving, but it's not the same as before. Please forgive me. I submit myself. O Nam Prabhu, please accept me as your servant again, your intimate servant, and give me your blessings. So this is the line of action or response that the healthy sadhaka should follow in order to reinstate himself and his eternal relationship with Srinam Prabhu. As Bhaktivinoda Thakur aptly stated earlier, that our first introduction to Krishna will come through the holy name. We will meet Krishna and shake hands with Krishna face to face through his holy name, not by an appointment in his house, or we won't be taken to Vaikuntha for a dinner party. The Garuda won't come down and say, listen, Varsha, we want you to come and meet Krishna. So he's invited you to, you have a nirmantran to his dinner party, so you please come and you'll be introduced tonight to Lord Krishna. So please dress up nicely as you're going to meet Lord Krishna. Really, me? So we actually meet Krishna face to face in the holy name, Sakshat Darshan. This is what he told. So it's a very appropriate and correct statement. When the king sees his servant's sincerity, he regains his confidence in the servant and then he reinstates them. So when the holy name sees that we're really sincere, we're not saying, oh, please help me, and I'm still acting stupid and acting neglectfully or acting wantonly or independently, And the Holy Name says, hey, you think you're cheating me? You think you can fool me? You say this, oh yes, I want your mercy, please, I'll be a good servant. I'll be a good boy. And then you keep being a bad boy. You say one thing and you do another thing. You're not what they call walking your talk. So Krishna, he's God. You can't fool him. You can fool some people, but you can't fool Krishna. But when he sees the sincerity, he regains his confidence and he reinstates them with the same privileges they had previously enjoyed. At this point, all offenses are forgiven. This is his rendition, which is quite eloquently and clearly stated from the Madhurya Kadambini of Vishnu Chakravarti Pad, chapter 3, page 30, he says. Then he says, the result, of course this is about removing offenses, but he says that this is a kind of repetition of what we mentioned before, but it's a valuable point, because last time when we spoke it, probably you didn't hear it. Because mostly we don't hear much. We listen, but we don't hear. What is the result? This is the point of this paragraph. What is the result of offenses to the Holy Name? If I was to say, take out your pencil, paper, now this is a short quiz or exam, please, I'm not going to do it, I'm just saying. What is the result of offenses to the Holy Name? Well, nothing. I mean, I've been offending the name for years. I still am sorry, and the temple gives me money to live on. I have a little flat, and I get some food, and I make my garlands and do my deity service. I don't see any result from. I've been, me and the Holy Name, we've been like antagonistic for years. I've never been very friendly towards the Holy Name. I've never been very dependent or submissive. I've always had a really kind of a love-hate relationship with the Holy Name. So you don't get any actual reason. There's no results from offenses. Do you think there's any results from offenses? Who said so? Look at me. I'm doing fine. I've been around for 29 years, 32 years, 17 years, 15 years, 14 years. Can't you see how wonderful I'm doing? See my nice smile and teeth? Isn't it nice? I have nice skin and beautiful hair. I'm doing great. We may think like this. So now let's hear it. The Holy Name neglects and then forgives offenders in the same way as the king. By his neglect, Trinam Prabhu's neglect, so this is the result, right? Offenders become spiritually impotent, means no power. Their joy in Krishna consciousness vanishes. So first thing is they become impotent. No power, no potency. Can't preach. Don't want to preach. They used to be, quote, fired up. Enthusiastic. Determined. Let's go preaching. Go on, Prabhu. Then they get embroiled in a trail of offenses. Oh, I don't feel like preaching and this and that. And what happened? Oh, nothing. I'm doing my bhajan now. I want to do my Nirjan Bhajan. You know, I'm doing my Manjari Srup Bhajan. My Astakaliya Bhajan. Acha. Oh, very good. You're very, very advanced. But all they're doing is just living in a cobweb of offenses. They're like a spider who's woven a cobweb for himself, a spider's net. And they're just living in that net of offenses and spinning webs and thinking, yes, I'm a big Bhajanandi. Before I was doing preaching work, but that's for neophytes. Now I'm very advanced. I chant 15 rounds every day. Becomes spiritually impotent and their joy in Krishna consciousness vanishes. I've seen so many devotees, and I've seen a devotee in the mirror also. I don't know who that was, but somebody I saw in the mirror one day, I looked in the mirror, I saw a guy like this also. That one day he was happy in Krishna consciousness, and next after some time he was sad. It's just some guy I saw in the mirror. It wasn't me, but some guy, I don't know. He came in one day and then he went out. I don't know. So the joy in Krishna consciousness vanishes. Oh, personally, I've seen, besides my own reflection, which is certainly one of the primary examples. But I've seen other devotees, when they join the first few years, they get Brahma initiation, they're smiling, and I don't go very often to the temples. And then it's maybe they go somewhere, and I go somewhere, and then I come back, and I see them after a couple of years, and they're so long-faced. You know, even in Vrindavan, you've seen hundreds of devotees. So long-faced, and like his mind is somewhere else, and he's not really centered. You can see the person's not centered. They're what we call, in our vernacular, spaced out. In other words, they're distracted. They're not focused. Their focus is on something. They're possessed, in one sense. They're possessed by some concept, some idea, which is not Krishna. Well, basically, it's Maya. Sense gratification, contemplating, well, maybe I should go to Poland and marry my old high school girlfriend. She was pretty sweet, and I talked to her on the phone, and she said she would agree to chant Hare Krishna once a month, and that's pretty good. That's pretty spiritual. That's pretty spiritual. You know, if she chants Hare Krishna once a month, I mean, I don't know, she's a devotee. She said she's almost a vegetarian. She only eats meat twice a day. So in this way, Maya captures us, and we lose the joy in Krishna consciousness. And I've seen many devotees, and I say, what happened to you? I mean, you're young. You look like you're 95. You're 24 years old, and you go. And you've seen it. If you go to different temples, you see sometimes so many years, and then you say, well, and then they're wearing saffron, and all of a sudden, oh, you fell in, something happened to your clothes? Well, you know, I was like brahmachari and wearing saffron, but, you know, I want to be honest. I mean, I want to be honest to everybody, and, you know, I was going to movies, and I was doing some bad stuff, and so I thought I should put on white and just be, like, cool. Acha. And along with the white cloth comes the long face. The joy evaporates. I'm not talking about grihastas. They're already, you know, enjoying the bliss of the dark well of family life. But griham anda kupam, as it said, griham anda kupam, the blind well of family life. This is what the Bhagavatam says. Family life is a griham anda kupam. You're walking in a field, you're happy, you're thin, you're in good shape, you're athletic, and you're just walking along in this field, and there was some abandoned well in the middle of the field. It was 50 feet deep, and it was dried up. And you're walking along, looking at the clouds, and you're thinking about your studies, and all of a sudden, doom! It was all covered with grass, and you fell in this well, and you went 50 feet down, doom! And when you got down there, your father was there. Your father was there, and there was this one lady there. And he said, oh, I'm glad you showed up because I've just arranged your marriage. This is your wife. Oh, that's great. And so this is your place, so you stay here. I'm leaving. So the father climbs up the well and he leaves you 50 feet in the griham on the kupa. So this is what happens. He said, what happened to me? Then after a few years, you get a big pot belly, you know, and you lose your figure. And you, oh, yeah, my wife's a good cook. Yeah, I have a book buddy about chaka chuck. And then long face and the kids, man. So and they say, what happened? Well, I was just ambling along the field one day and then doop, I fell into an open well, and that was the end of my joy in Krishna consciousness. So the joy in Krishna consciousness vanishes, and it's as clear as a bell, as they say, dong, dong, bells ring true and loud, penetratingly. So you say, oh, what happened to you? And he didn't get married. He just changed, put on white, and he's just like, because he's contemplating. He's contemplating the objects of the senses and not Krishna. And he's involved with his quote-unquote bhajan and not preaching. And he's involved, quote-unquote, with his bhajan, which means, oh, I really can't attend the Mangalarti because, you know, I'm worshipping my Giriraj. I'm doing, like, special puja. And then you actually go to his house. He gets up at 9 o'clock in the morning. He used to get up at 3:30, go to Mangalarti. But now he's a big bhajanandi. So he gets up at 9 o'clock. This is the actual behind the scenes. That's what makes the long face, which you see everywhere. No joy. Because he's doing his very deep bhajan. So we have to think about these things. So these are the results of
offenses.
The joy in Krishna consciousness vanishes, And these devotees, these offenders, this is beautiful language. This book is really wonderful. These offenders, they feel orphaned even while living in the midst of the Lord's family of devotees. In one word, they feel alienated. I'm living in Los Angeles. There's 400 devotees here. And I feel all alone. I have no friends. Because all your friends who want to be devotees and they want to chant and preach and go to the program. But you've created an independent scene because of your sense grad, as they say. Discount sense grad. Your sense gratification. So now you're all by yourself. They have an expression, surrounded by water and dying of thirst. You ever heard this phrase? What does that mean? It means that you're flying in your airplane and you fell out in the ocean. And the ocean is salty. So we have to drink fresh water, not salty water. Although actually you can drink salty water. But most people don't like it, so they don't do it. So, surrounded by water, dying of thirst. Do you know what thirst is? It means no water. So I'm surrounded by devotees. I'm living in the international society for... what is the rest of it? Krishna consciousness. But I'm in a society of devotees. Vaishnavis and Vaishnavas. But I am not Krishna conscious. You follow? Because I am in the isolation ward. And who has isolated me? Me. Because I am highly contaminated by nuclear fallout. So I've been isolated. Due to why? Due to my isolation means all by yourself. Isolation. Means you're all by yourself. There's everybody. Everyone's eating. You're sitting in the prasadam line. Everyone's eating. There's 90 people. There's 90 men with you. Brahmacharis, grihastas. And you're eating. And you look around and say, I don't have any friends. Nobody likes me in this temple. And I don't like anybody. I'm all by myself. And there's 90 on each side. And looking, you're looking. Dhoti, all tilak, dhoti, everything. But this feeling comes over you. I'm all by myself. Alienated. Why? Because of Aparad. As Krishna said, you Aparad, you Ramchandra Puri, jao. Get out from Puri. He was driven out of Puri by the Vaishnavas because he offended Mahaprabhu and the other devotees. He was a Vaishnava. Ramchandra Puri is a sannyasi, a tyagi, disciple of Madhavendra Puri. Big guru. Madhavendra Puri is not a small timer. He's a big guru, but he became an offender. And then he was just driven out. The devotees said, get out, you're spoiling everything. While living in the midst, that means the midst of, means middle, surrounded by, you're in the temple, everyone's all sides of you, serving, eating, chanting, they're blissful kirtan, you go to the kirtan, you say, oh man, I don't feel like dancing, these kirtans, this guy plays kartals too loud, and this guy doesn't know how to sing, and oh, what is this? We used to have a good mridanga player, now he went to New York to play for the temple, now we have this ding-a-ling guy, he can't play mridanga, I can play better than him, but I won't. what is this guy? Who's singing this? He's a new guy in the temple. I can sing much better than him. But I don't. Because you lost the joy, you lost the taste. You're an offender. There's many types of these kind of people there. Just hanging around the temples. Like this. So they're living in a family and I feel totally alienated. Although... this may leave devotees feeling devastated. This offensive mentality, this alienation, this isolationism, this loneliness. The devotee may feel devastated, destroyed, broken. Those who faithfully continue their devotional practices and take full responsibility for their misfortune, blaming no one else, gradually improve. Generally, the tendency is everywhere, in spiritual or material society, people blame someone else for their problems. Oh, this temple's no good. The management's no good. It's all politics here. This is so much all these Bengalis, they do politics. They don't understand us Punjabi devotees. These Bengalis, they make a cartel. What do they call a cartel? group of oil wallahs, oil mongers, and they keep the jack up the price. So they got it. Hey, we're the five countries. We got the oil. You want it? Pay, Jack. It's called cartel, and I don't mean cartel. It's cartel. C-A-R-T-E-L. Right? They do that. They jam the market or whatever they say. Control the market. So we take full responsibility, blaming no one, then gradually can improve. The holy name, pleased by sincere repentance, empowers them to chant properly once more. In other words, the holy name accepts us. Hey, you're very sincere, you're repentant, you're sorrowful, you feel contrition, and you don't want to do this again, and you're real. I see you're real. I've tested you. I've watched you. You're really sincere. So I'm going to reinstate you. I'll give some mercy to you. I'll give that joy back to you. I'll give that feeling of peace back to you. I'll give that taste back to you when you chant the name. Then you feel like such a fortunate person. So, oh, I'm back in service. Hey, looking good. You're looking happy. What happened? Oh, I went through some hard times, but I got some good experience. And I did some good suffering for my offenses. Now I really appreciate the devotees and so happy to serve here. I'm living in Vrindavan. Hey, it's great. I'm glad you're back out of the doghouse. It's called making a comeback. Sometimes you're down and out, you're on your face, lying in the ground, and then you make a comeback and you win that championship. Become the world's heavyweight champion after getting knocked out, right? That happens. This guy, that guy, and then you come back, boom, boom. Go back, lift weights, look at the movies, watch how the guy, oh, I let my guard down. And okay, next time, boom. So the same thing, we're also fighting. We're fighting a war against Maya. So we let our guard down and we get knocked off our keel. The nullification, which means removal, of the bad habits, then again follows the standard sequence, which these were already described. So 398 is another thing here. What can save devotees? This is all about removing anartha, so we get right. I'm in aparat. So we keep this in mind, and then when we review the remaining anarthas, then we can have some understanding. What can save devotees who fall into the misfortune of committing offenses? How to be saved from this misfortune of being a nam-aparadi? Faith, shraddha. Faith is the redeeming quality of sincere devotees. What does redeeming mean? The redeem. To get back, to receive. Saving. Faith is the saving quality of sincere devotees. Despite the holy name's neglect and punishment, faithful devotees maintain their faith in Krishna. In bhakti, devotional service, and the holy name, they do not fall from the path. They think, oh, I'm really doing bad. I've really been offensive. Now Krishna's not happy with me. But anyway, I just have to keep going. I have to practice bhakti and carry on with my designated services and continue to chant, although it's really tasteless and it's really hard. The 16 rounds used to fly off my tongue like eagles off in the mountains, soaring in the sky. Hare Krishna, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. But now it's like, oh my God, I feel like I'm chewing sawdust. From the dust, wood dust, particles of wood. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Oh, wow. It takes forever to chant 16 rounds, 5 hours, 10 hours. 2 rounds in the morning, 3 rounds in the afternoon, 7 rounds. And then sometimes we miss and we skip and this and that. It's really painful when you fall off your bicycle and try to get back on. It's very difficult. What was smooth sailing becomes like rough seas. You get back, whoa, the waves are coming, the water, the storm's blowing. It was going great then. So that's the punishment period, the testing period. But anyway, keep on going. Keep the faith in Krishna. Don't say, oh, Krishna, he's no good. No, okay, Krishna, I deserve it. I'm a demon. I'm bad. We keep our faith in Krishna and in bhakti and continue serving, and we have faith in the holy name, then we don't actually fall from the bhakti mark. Eventually we'll get picked up by the holy name and dusted off. Our wounds will be patched up by the holy name, and he'll give us some tonic. Holy name will feed us some tonic, some jivani ras, rasayana, and we'll get our strength back and our happiness back. And then it's smooth sailing once again. Harinam eva kevalam. Right? You had this experience in your 99 years of Krishna consciousness. How can devotees protect their faith from the ravages of offenses? It's really good language. Ravages means the, I don't know, what do you say, ravages? It means the chopping up or the destruction of their faith, the obliteration of their faith, the ravages of time. Often they say the ravages of time. You see some building and then 50 years later, the wind and the rain and the heat and the ravages, they say the ravages of time. That means the constant deterioration and degradation that happens. So offenses, they deteriorate our devotion. They deteriorate our determination. They destroy and deteriorate or diminish. Deteriorate means diminish, destroy, reduce, lessen. Reduce, lessen, or decrease our joy or happiness or determination, our sincerity and chanting. So how to do this? How to protect our faith? Because when our faith goes, then everything goes. So he says, again, only the cloudburst means big rainfall, a pure Vaishnava association can protect devotees' faith from the forest fire of reactions to offenses. There is no other means. So offenses here are compared to a forest fire, and bhakti lata is compared to a tender baby little plant. Bhakti lata, creeper of devotion. And if there's a massive, huge forest fire, then what are the chances that this little tiny creeper, look at this little guy, what's the chances that he can survive a forest, raging forest fire? Zero. Massive trees get burned to crisp, turned into dust, ashes. Snakes get burned up, animals get burned up. We'll just speak of a tender little bhakti lata. So these offenses, this trail of offenses, is compared to a blazing, ultra-destructive forest fire. So the only thing that can put out a forest fire is not the fire brigade bringing buckets of water or a little fire hose. A cloudburst, Madhurya Kadambini. Cloudburst means huge monsoon clouds come in, lightning, dum, dum, and it rains like millions and thousands, millions and millions of tons of water coming down like columns. It's called inundation, deluge, or massive inundation of water. It's called a cloudburst. It's a burst. Bursting means exploding. It's explosion. The clouds burst. Boom, boom, boom. It even sounds like that. And all this lightning and thunder. Boom, boom, boom. Then afterwards, psh, and then it rains. Sometimes it rains for 3 days. He's from Bombay. Sometimes 7 days and nights it rains. We don't know what that's like in North India, at least in Vrindavan. It doesn't rain 7 days in 5 years. I've been here for 5 years. It hasn't rained. It rains an hour here, an hour there. So that type of rainfall, which means mercy, grace, compassion, blessings, it takes a shape or is the association with advanced devotees. That can save our faith. Because otherwise the forest fire of offenses or aparad, whatever that is, davanala. Davanala means, right? Davanala means forest fire. Samsara davanala lila loka. The davanala, that association can save us or save our faith. Otherwise, these offenses can then ravage our faith and chew away our faith like a termite. You get termites inside your bed. If you have weak wood, you have mango wood or some soft wood, and they just go in there like gangbusters. They chew and they chew and they chew and chew, and there are all kinds of holes and borings, and pretty soon your bed collapses on the ground. There's nothing left of it. Even though it looks like a shell, the legs are there, because they don't eat the outside, they eat the inside. So offenses are like termites. Outside, you have the shell of a devotee, but your core is eaten up. Your core means your bhakti, what makes you tick, your petrol. You have a beautiful, fast, beautiful Ferrari, 16 cylinders, it'll go 350 kilometers. If you can find a road to drive it like that. But there's no petrol. It's like in the war when the tanks are fighting and running across the battlefield, shooting bombs and rockets, and then they run out of the gas. That's it. 50 lakh tank. It doesn't do anything. These armored tanks. There's no gas, no bombing, no anything. You have to jump out of the tank and run away. Then the enemy throws a piece of dynamite in and blows it up for five rupees. Right? They blow up a tank, it costs 5 rupees a piece of nitroglycerin. That's 50 lakhs to make. When we run out of gas, you're nowhere. All your turrets and all your tracks and all this caterpillar things. So the bhakti is like this. Bhakti is the petrol, it's the fuel, it's the substance, it's the core. The core of a devotee is the bhakti. But when offenses, they gnaw away at that. They chew it. They chew it up. Chew up your core. And you're standing, you see some bed. It looks like a nice bed. And you lie in it. It's like booby trap. Some kind of booby trap. Because you see the legs are there. I've seen sometimes, especially in this tropical place like Puri in South India. See the legs. But inside, the insects have eaten everything out. It's just standing there because no one sat on it. They've eaten up and down the legs, and but the outer crust, the hard part of the outer side, which is lacquered, the wood is lacquered, so they don't like it. So they bore through that, and they go into the soft stuff, and they chew it up. And so as soon as you lie in the bed, the legs are you lie on the ground. So this is the termites of offenses. They chew up our hearts, our bhakti hearts. Right? They chew up the bhakti lata. And we're going around, oh, I'm a devotee. See, I got Tilak, I got Shika, I have Jai Prabhu, Haribo Prabhu, Radhe Radhe, Hare Krishna. But there's nothing, there's no more core. You're rotten to the core. They have these phrases about fruit, usually it's about fruit, or people also. This guy is rotten to the core. Core means the essence, the internal, the vastu, the substance. Vastu means substance, core, the essential part of you. Like some people, you see them, they have nice skin, nice bodies, and all of a sudden they drop dead. Why? Happens all the time. Because their heart went poof. Their heart was no good. They had blocked valves or whatever. 30 years old. What happened to Joe? 38 years old, keeled over dead. And the biopsy. Oh, heart failure. Why? Because he had, 10 kilos of cholesterol in his arteries from eating pakoras and rajma all day. Or whatever. So he's driving his car, he's so friendly. It's like devotee, looks so good. And then one day, hey, what happened to so-and-so? I think he blew. So only the cloudburst of Vaishnava Association can save the devotee. 399b. Those offenders who humble themselves are saved. We have to become humble. They tolerate the pain resulting from their offenses and faithfully chant in the company of pure devotees. They are redeemed only because they are redeemed, which means saved from their offenses, only because the holy name, seeing their sincerity, which is a repeat of what we said, gradually, slowly, shows his mercy and reinvests their chanting with devotional potency. This is a review. Bit by bit, which means slowly, slowly, little at a time, these devotees, offenders, again taste bliss. Gradually their unwanted desires are removed, and little by little, ignorance and passion evaporate. Finally, once again, the path to Krishna Prem shines clear. Beautiful writing. Which I said, clear sailing. I was saying, I gave the analogy, you're on a boat, it's rough seas and water falling overboard and everything, whatever. And then you get to a peaceful time, the clear sailing, I call it. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has mercifully given Vaishnavas, is given one all-embracing guideline to assure offenseless devotion. Devotees who conduct themselves, now here's the clincher. Devotees who conduct themselves accordingly are certainly spared the pain of offensive chanting. Krishna's Kaviraj enjoins, which means he encourages, or orders, demands, or commands. He enjoins all devotees to follow this guideline of Mahaprabhu. So what is it? Well, come on. What is the guideline? What is this guideline that Mahaprabhu is going to give us, which will ensure and prevent us from ever making offenses to the holy name? What is it? What's this big secret? What is this guideline? I never heard it before. It's something new. I've been around for 94 years. I never heard it. What is this? Some new secret? Where is it coming from? And then Krishna's Kaviraj writes in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila 1732. He says, himself, the author, raising my hands above my head, I declare, are you listening? Are you ready to hear the declaration of Krishna's Kaviraj?
Yes.
Yes. Everyone, please hear me. Are you listening?
Yes.
String this verse on the thread of the holy name. Like the thread, the holy name becomes a thread. You know, thread string. That you make, you sew some garlands on a piece of thread. String this verse on the thread of the holy name and wear it on your
neck
for continuous remembrance. So what is this guideline? What does this guideline do? It assures, it guarantees, it delivers us and gives us offenseless devotion. Our devotion, not only our chanting, all our acts of devotion, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Archanam, Vandanam, Sakyam, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam, all the basic forms of devotion, Navavida Bhakti or Panchanga Bhakti, they will be performed without offenses. If we follow this guideline, which is Trinadabhi Sunichena Taroriva Sahishuna Amanina Manidena Kirtaniya Sadahari. This is the big, big secret of the day. You've all been waiting for this special revelation coming directly from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One should think, one who thinks himself lower than the grass, who is more tolerant than a tree, and who does not expect personal honor, yet is always prepared to give all respect to others, can very easily always chant the holy name of the Lord. So he's standing there on the Dwadasaditya Tila, Krishna's Kaviraj, where he's standing in Shamakund. Who knows? He wrote this. They say he wrote Chaitanya Charitamrita here, but some people debate about that. Krishna's Kaviraj is standing outside of his kutir, which is right next to Raghunath Das. And he comes out one day and he raises his hand in the sky. He said, listen to all the Vaishnavas at Shamakund, Radhakund, everywhere. I declare emphatically, right? That's what he's saying. Everyone, listen, are you listening? String this verse, tie this verse, run it through the thread of the holy name. And hang it around your neck forever. You should constantly remember. Constantly means only today. What does constantly mean?
Forever,
all times. Today, tomorrow, forever. Morning, noon, and night. When you hear, when you chant, when you read Bhagavatam, remember the verse. When you do puja, remember the verse. When you take prasadam, remember the verse. When you mix up with devotees, remember the verse. When you serve your husband or wife, remember the verse. When you serve your guru, remember the verse. When you go on Brikama, remember the verse. When you go to have darshan, remember the verse. In other words, don't forget it. Got it? So this is a big thing. He went to so much trouble to jump up and down outside of his kutir. Raise his hands into the air. There's no other verse. See how many verses are something like 3,500 or 6,000 verses in Chaitanya Charitamrita. There's quite a bit. Not as many as Bhagavatam. But he went to so much trouble about this verse. He got all excited about this verse. He's jumping up and down, raising his arm. Hey, come on, listen, listen. There's 6,500 verses. He didn't say anything about the other ones. This one, this means this must be the guide. This is the guideline. This is the clincher. This is the bottom line or the bottom dollar or whatever you want to call it. This is the real thing. So take it to heart. And respond accordingly. Well, this small conclusion to this class. If devotees carefully avoid offenses, they inevitably, which means soon enough, eventually, come to the milestone. Milestone is a marker on the side of the road. Govardhan, 3 kilometers. And Radhakund, 5 kilometers, is some stone that tells you how far, how many miles or kilometers you have gone. to measure your progress on the road. They inevitably come to the milestone in their spiritual development, at which unsteadiness transforms into steadiness. In other words, we leave the vast intermediate zone, the ocean of aparad. It's called anartha nivritti. And then we come to the platform of nishta. At the stage of nishta, now what do? The emphasis is in cultivating Krishna consciousness and no longer on avoiding things unfavorable to devotion and protecting oneself from maya. The emphasis shifts from looking for things favorable for loving Krishna. Then the nectar of pure devotion really begins to flow. So turn on the nectar, drink the nectar, jump in the stream, go downstream with the flow of nectar. It begins to flow when we become steady, because we don't make offenses anymore. We love, we appreciate others. We're grateful to everyone. We appreciate them. We love them. We respect everyone. We love everyone. We serve them. Happily, willfully, joyfully, open-heartedly. Like, I guess I should serve you. It was like, no, I'm a sannyasi. I don't serve anybody. Hey, serve me my food. Hey, come on. No, everybody's a devotee. Everybody's Krishna's servant. Why? And then you try to serve. Oh, yours. That's so funny. People, I tried, when I was Radha Damodar for a few years, giving out Prabhupada's Mahaprasada, of course, here, serving friends and guests or whomever. And then oftentimes, they always say, oh, you're a sannyasi. You shouldn't serve. I said, really? Well, what does bhakti mean anyway? Bhakti means service, doesn't it? I thought it meant service. No. But you're the guru, or you're a sannyasi. Everyone should serve you. Oh, well, that's right. Yeah. Okay, bring me in some sherbet and five people fanning me and King Tut from Egypt. All my sevadasis and servants. Hare Krishna. So it's like this. So the greatest joy is to serve. Enjoyment is a bummer. Enjoy, as they say in slang English, enjoyment is a bummer. Bummer means a bad trip or whatever. It means it's no fun. It's fun. It's actually fun to serve. And if you've ever done it, you know how much fun it is to go to the factory, your husband's factory, and you serve. You're the boss. You're the big boss. You hire and fire him, and you get down and drop your ego on the ground and say, "You're a son of God. God is the father of you and me. The only difference between you and me is I did some piety in my last life and I became the boss. And you didn't do the same piety, so you became the packer. You became the worker. That's all. And if I don't do anything now, in next life, guess what I'll be? I'll be the packer and you'll be the boss. Because you're going to church, or what do you say, mandir every day, and you're doing puja and you're doing fasting, and you only get 20 rupees a month pay, but you're giving 5 rupees away in donation. And I'm making 5 lakhs and I'm giving nothing. I'm giving everything to my sweetheart, my wife and kiddies. So enjoy now. This is a fact. So the realized, or the humble worker who is God conscious and knows a little shastra, he's just cool. Okay, enjoy, Big Daddy. Enjoy yourself, because next life you'll be like me, and I'll be like you. Because I'm doing all good things as best I can to improve my situation, and you're doing nothing to improve your situation. Because you think, eat, drink, and be merry, because there's no next life. Because you're a big muddha. But I'm foolish, I'm stupid, I never get any degree. So that's, and I know why, because I played my hand wrong in the last life. I'm not going to do it again. Every ounce of my energy, every extra penny I have, I'm going to do the right thing and good things and read the shastra and chant. There's many extremely pious and religious shudras and rickshawalas. But they won't be shudras and rickshawalas forever. And if you think so, you're a vimudha. Not only a mudha, but a vimudha. Big ass instead of a small ass. So this is how it works. karma fall. I am, everything's for me. I work hard, this is my money. Acha. Oh, you're so smart. Who gave you the brain? Who gave you the body? Who gave you the remembrance? Who gave you the education? It's all His mercy. Borrowed plumes. You're so great. So it's like this. Yeah.
I just wondered how he got this realization, either from reading books or by his own experience or by his being related by the teachings.
The from Shivaram Swami? I guess you should best ask him. Because he's the author. Because if you read something from my book and then you ask me about that, then I can answer appropriately. I would like to say, knowing him, and knowing how much preaching he's done in his life, extensive preaching, meeting with hundreds and thousands of students and people, and counseling, and traveling all over Europe and Canada, this person is not ordinary, he's an extraordinary devotee, that he's really speaking. I mean, he footnotes everything so you can see. He says, this is a summary of Madhurya Kadambini. So, in one sense, the book simply looks like a rehashing or of existing scriptures. But I've read those existing scriptures also in English, which that's the only access he has. And what he gleans from those scriptures in English, Madhurya Kadambini, and then puts, you know, rehashes or spits out again in his book, it's a whole fresh expression, which you can only have such a fresh expression if you're really understanding deeply what's really being said.
Because it happens like this.
Well, Madhurya Kadambini, if you get a good edition, it's quite clear. A lot of these things are also mentioned there. Because he's telling where it's coming from. It's sourced from there. But I've read these books because I've also tried to write something about the Holy Name. But my perception or realization are quite insignificant compared to his, no doubt. Oh yeah, anybody that's a little sincere, you say, wow, hey, yeah, you're right, and then that happens, and this happens, and uh-oh, hey, how do you know so much? He's done it, he's seen it himself, or he's seen others do it, or it's as it is. Of course, Prabhupada says these things too, but you really have to kind of pan the river. You have to go for the gold and filter the gold nuggets through your gold panning. You go to some river and some gold particles are flowing there. It's called nuggets. And you keep putting your screen in there and pulling up the water, and eventually you collect some of these. It's very systematic and sequential points that he's presenting are, of course, in Prabhupada's books, but you might have to dive deep and work hard. And he already did it. So all glories to him, and take advantage. Like the wheel, some caveman or somebody made a wheel. Whoever made the wheel, so you don't have to reinvent the wheel. They have this phrase: you want to move something somewhere. You put four wheels on a piece of board and put the material there and move it. Well, how could I move this heavy object from here to there? Because I can't lift it. I have to invent some kind of new wheel. A wheel's a wheel, you just make it. So he's done a really wonderful job. So that's why I'm so much occasionally supporting our presentation with his very eloquent and realized statements. These are coming from Shuddha Bhakti Chintamani. Shuddha Bhakti Chintamani, written by, collected by, or presented by, however you want to say it, Pujyapad Srila Shivaram Swami Maharaj.